I call Randy.
Hey, Randy.
First of all, it's an honor to be sharing in any meeting. And big or small, I feel very honored that somebody at least had something that they wanted or that I must have done somewhere along the line that would make it possible for someone to say, hey, why don't you come and share your piece with us? Because, you know, there was a time in my life when nobody wanted to hear what I had to say, and I used to have to really raise my voice and talk loud and try and talk over people, argue with people, fight with people in order to be heard. And it's such an honor when somebody asks you to come and share in a convention, a workshop, a home group meeting. And one thing is I owe it all to God, and I like to thank God, too, for being here. When they expressed the topic and what time the topic was, I immediately started questioning, first of all, okay, what do we talk about when we talk about community? Because community is such a broad topic. And, you know, I didn't do the research that I normally do, look in my basic text under in the index and find community and start reading all that. I didn't do that. And I also wondered, okay, 6 o'clock in the evening when I'm in Ocean City usually is the time when I'm going out to dinner because, you know, we all get all nice and dressed up nice and we go out for supper in one of these fancy restaurants here up the strip and then we come back and see the main meet and usually the last meetings are around 4:30. So I was going, okay, who the heck is going to be in a workshop at 6 o'clock? You know, I'd like to thank those of you who came because, you know, this is exactly what I expected. And so y'all are living up to my expectations. A couple of things that I want to get out of the way, first of all, the programming committee has done a great job, and so has the committee as a whole who put on this convention. I'd like to thank the Montgomery area of the CMP region. But one thing is about 2 weeks ago, and I just got to get this out of the way because it's bothering me. There's a physical ailment that I'm going through here. 2.5 weeks ago, I had some surgery on my shoulder, right? And I still got the stitches in there. And the Hug Squad, I love them to death, right? And they've just been, you know, I have to go, God, take some ibuprofen every time I get a hug from some of these guys, you know what I'm saying? My shoulder's been really sore, and, you know, people like to come up and, hey, Randy, what's going on, you know? And so, like, I've had to learn to accept some of that. Luckily, through this whole surgical process, I had orthoscopic surgery, and, you know, they did some bone work in there, and they did some tendon repair work. And it was really painful, and I did it without any narcotics. And I'm really proud of myself for saying that because I often hear about people with time going out after, you know, a surgical procedure because, you know, they get a visit from Percodan Den and the Percocet kid, and, you know, right, they're off and running. You know, give an addict an excuse to use. And I didn't even want to test those waters, so I had a talk with my surgeon. And this is just for those of you who might be facing something like this down the road, or if you ever do run into a problem like this down the road and you're kind of wondering what to do. Because let's face it, sometimes you run into a medical problem where it's impossible to do it without some sort of pain management. But what they did for me is they stuck this epidural in my neck. And they froze this the side of me from here down for about a day and a half. I was lying up in Suburban Hospital in Montgomery County. And it worked. I didn't have to use or take a narcotic legitly for pain management. And, of course, up to a lot of the medical profession who was helping me, to their surprise, you know, they... First, my surgeon, I told him my story, and he was, okay, we'll try something. Then I was, the anesthesiologist comes in before the surgery and starts interviewing me. And it says, well, on your chart here, Mr. Kirzner, you're allergic to narcotics. Just exactly what does that mean? And I go, well, I sort of kind of break out in handcuffs when I get a hold of them and get some of them up in me, or I break out in jail. And he kind of looked at the side of his face at me. He goes, well, just exactly what do you mean by that? I go, if you start me, I don't know what's going to happen because I am powerless, even if I get a little taste, because that's all it takes for me is just a little taste. And you know something? You see, they would have given it to me for all the right reasons because, of course, I would have been in a lot of pain. I probably wouldn't have felt it, but I didn't even want to test the waters because there's also the risk of having their pharmacy robbed. because I would have gone on a rampage. And in the orthopedic wing, after all these other bone surgeries are happening, and I'm kept there overnight, there's a lot of stuff being passed out there, and there's a lot of stuff at the nurse's station. And I know me. I would have done anything, manipulated any which way but loose. Because in the recovery room, I remember when they woke me up from the surgery, they were coming around, and it was like, who wants what? You know, and I, right over here, I'll take five, you know, and it would have been all right. But that's what my disease was saying in my head, and I'm really glad that I went through this, because I've been in this Narcotics Anonymous community for a long time now, and I've learned a new language, and I've learned how to say no. And it started, you know, with a few root canals and some bone grafting in my mouth, because, you know, I was I come from the school that had a particular fondness for certain substances from the opiate family, and naturally they did a number on my teeth. And I've had a lot of dental work done, bone grafting and stuff like that, and it was always, no, let me try it this way, and if it doesn't work, then I'll bother you in the middle of the night to give me a Percodan. And it always seemed like ibuprofen worked for me. You know, yes, there was still pain there. It didn't all dissipate, but you know what? We can do this thing on certain types of surgeries. Because so many people I talk about, I had a root canal. Next thing I knew, I was popping perks. And then I was shooting dope. It didn't take me long. Or I had a periodontal pocket in my mouth. Or I had a knee surgery. We can do all that without the use of a narcotic. And I've done it. And I'd just like to tell you, you can do it too. And I got through it. It's just today I was starting to get a little agitated a little, because when you touch there, I still got the stitches up in there, and I got a staple in there, and it kind of hurts a little bit. So, you know, but I just wanted to clear that up. And I've also been noticing a few things at this convention too. And I've noticed how, you know, I've been around for a few years now, and I've noticed how we've changed at conventions. We've changed our stance. I remember when I went to my first convention, I think it was 1988 or 89, and we were all really new, you see. And around my region where I come from, you know, 4 years, 3 years clean was a long, long time. You know, and it wasn't that big. And I remember our stance was to get up and go and just to do everything and stand around like this. Now I look around this convention, it seems like the stance is like this. You know, just mouth hugging a second, I'm busy on the telephone. You know, and there's people with the telephones and the walkie-talkies and everything like that. You know, so I got two walkie-talkies, you see? I got the phone. I'm now the true conventioneer because I got all the equipment. You see, the committees have their walkie-talkies. I got my walkie-talkies. And I feel pretty good about that because all I ever wanted to do was fit in, right? Anyways, this thing about community, there's a difference between communities and neighborhoods. And to me, there's all sorts of different types of communities. You see, I even worked in my recovery journey back in the early 90s. I worked in a therapeutic community. You see, when I was in rehab in 1988, that's when I got clean, I did what everybody else does. Geez, I want to be a counselor. Because, you know, I liked the way the counselors were treating me, and I liked how I said, I can do this. So I went to school, and I got my Certified Addiction Counselor, CAC. CSC is one of my customers at work. But I got my CAC, and I went and I started working in the field, and I worked in a therapeutic community, behavioral modification. You know, and we were taking people who did not know how to live in a community and just trying to teach them the basic fundamentals of living in a community: responsibility, picking up after yourself, cooking a meal, doing the laundry, stuff that true addicts of addictive natures and obsessive compulsive natures who only knew how to the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more, that's all they knew. We weren't schooled in how to assimilate in the community. The only thing we were schooled to do in the community is to cause havoc. That's all. When we would drive down the street, our neighbors would be worried about whether we were going to bounce off their cars on the way home from a real good one, or whether we were going to hurt somebody because we got in an argument with them, or whether we were going to rob, cheat, or steal. See, we were feared. So we that's all we knew. That's you know, most communities did not want us in there, except for the certain communities which housed the shooting galleries and all the deviant behaviors and all that. There was a community for us. It was called Skid Row. I mean, I'm only talking about me. I mean, that's where I ended up. I ended up in the shooting galleries in Parkdale. And that's this neighborhood in Toronto where you just don't go. But I did. I came from suburbia down there. And that's where I ended up in my disease. But then, see, there's many different types of communities, and communities are usually separated by boundaries. There are boundaries of income. There are boundaries of religion. There are boundaries of race. There are boundaries of language. Okay? And in a lot of cases, one community is right next to another, and there's usually a very distinct dividing line. One thing I love about the NA community is we take in all comers, right? And we talk a new language in this here community. You see, our language is very different. We even have a clarity statement now that came up in 1993 at a convention once, and we adopted this. But it tells us about how to behave in our community, what languages to talk about. Some of us take this stuff to extremes because we do have fundamentalists here in our community. We also have wannabe professionals in our community. We have wannabe lawyers, wannabe doctors. People are going to tell you that the medications you're on are no good or going to help you out in your court case. Do what I did. You know, there's all this free advice in our community. The only thing I've never found here in Narcotics Anonymous was the bankers. I couldn't find the money. Right? But I found all the advice and some. You know, the thing is like, we come into this community, we still wear certain masks in Narcotics Anonymous because we're not yet a part of. And I walk into like my first meeting, and the first thing I noticed was, these people are all weird. They're hugging one another. And the weirdest sensation I ever got, because my dad never hugged me, and my brothers and I did not have this warm and fuzzy, cushy relationship. In other words, I'd never been hugged by a man before. And the first thing that happened to me in my first NA meeting is this man at the door hugged me. And that really felt uncomfortable. I did not like that. And then this woman hugged me, and that was okay. You know, I enjoyed that. And back when I came in, They kind of like stuck to you. You know, you're kind of new around here, like the speaker was sharing. I don't remember walked over to the coffee pot, but I remember they handed me this meeting list, and I still have that meeting list. And they said, just go to these meetings, and you'll be okay, because it does get better. And in my mind, I thought, because I didn't understand the language, I thought it was going to get easier. You know, it has gotten better, but it has never gotten easier for me because life today on life's terms is still a struggle. But I have a place where I can go to discuss these struggles that I have with life. A lot of great things have happened to me since I joined the Narcotics Anonymous community. I moved to the United States in 1997. I was already, coming up on 10 years clean. And where I come from in Narcotics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous is 90% male, 99% white, middle class. That's where Narcotics Anonymous is made up of. And when I came down here, I did not realize that there was some boundaries that existed. Silent. Nobody talks much about them. But there was some ills of society that have crept into the rooms. And because when I first started, I lived in Rockville, and during the daytime, I used to like to go to meetings in D.C. I used to love to go to meetings in D.C., and mostly in the east of the river area, and because I used to work downtown a lot, and people used to ask me, what do you go to those meetings for? And I go, well, because they're NA meetings. I didn't understand what they were saying because I did not understand that language. It didn't exist where I come from. And however, I would never walk into a French meeting. Okay, so we had our own little scene up there, you know, that dealt with, the dividing lines One reason is I couldn't understand everything, so I felt more comfortable in the English meetings. And in Toronto, they didn't have too many, but when I went into Quebec, I'd always suss out the English meetings, because it was really hard to follow a meeting with a dictionary in my hand. And plus, in the French meetings, they smoked a lot, like one after another, everybody. If you're ever in Quebec, you have to smoke. It's a prerequisite. They don't let you in unless you smoke. Anyways, the meetings, like, you just couldn't breathe in there. And so I didn't feel comfortable, but I didn't understand how this community was set up. And finally, a bunch of years ago, I was at a convention sharing downtown in they have an area convention downtown in Washington, and I was sharing. And I asked somebody who I go to meetings with, and I says, "You know, how come there's no people from our area at this convention?" And she told me, because Narcotics Anonymous around here is like a small town in Mississippi, and I didn't understand that. But then I started thinking about communities. And how sometimes people don't cross over the boundary line. And I didn't believe it was happening in Narcotics Anonymous. There's also that community boundary of language, and there's also that boundary of clean time. Because that's one thing I really have a problem dealing with. The longer I spend in Narcotics Anonymous, the more isolated I sometimes feel because of the expectation. But geez, you got 13 and a half years clean. You shouldn't be feeling like that. Why not? I'm dealing with life on life's terms here. You know, this thing has been going on back and forth with my wife and myself for some time now. And, you know, in any community, you've got people who wear masks and never take them off, and people who get real. You know, I try to gravitate towards people who get real. But there are people who hurt people around here really bad. And it's really hard for me to sometimes tolerate knowing that, because, you know, sometimes we do go out. You know, they don't have the relationships pamphlet out yet. What do we do when one of us go out? And my wife went out back in 96, and she just came back. She's got like 60 days clean. And her and I separated. You know, we sold the house. We went on our. That's why I'm out there in Anne Arundel County, and she's in Germantown. But then we got back together. Because, you know, she's made a commitment back to this program. And sometimes I find a lot of difficulty because of the things that I know. You know, like, I know that there are people in this convention here, more than one, who knew that she was out using and who have been, let's say, in a biblical way with her. And there's some things I don't trust about this community, and I just can't get over that. And it really angers me sometimes. And yes, I carry resentment around, because there's certain things I really have trouble forgiving people for, especially when they're like sponsees and stuff like that. You know, even out there, when I was out there in the shooting galleries in Parkdale, I always had to watch out of my back. I really don't feel that I have to do that here, but you know what? For every mark, there's a mark in here too. You know? For every mark out there, there's a mark in here. And sometimes we do set ourselves up to be taken advantage of. Not to say, you know, you ask people, well, what is the NA program? And in their infinite wisdom, they'll say, well, Narcotics Anonymous is a nonprofit fellowship or society for whom drugs have become a major problem. That's wrong. That's the fellowship, you see. The program and the fellowship will let you down sometimes. Sometimes you'll be caught up in a service meeting and there'll be arguing going back and forth. But, you know, the program is a set of spiritual principles written so simply we can follow them in our daily lives. And spiritual principles never conflict one another. Therefore, it's God-given. It's perfect. Okay? The fellowship, not perfect. We're a community. We've got new language here. We've got new ways of doing things. We try to be responsible. We try to grow up in here. And, you know, I'd like to say that through this time I've been here, that I have grown a little bit, but I do have setbacks, and I do have to deal with people sometimes that what I like to consider, and a few friends might like to consider, as the blessing blockers that won't let you have your blessing without a price. You know, and that's only a small few, but they're here too. It's like in any community, and then of course we have the police of our community. You know, we learn a language in here, and what really sometimes upsets me is when a newcomer is sharing and they say something that's not in our language, like the ANDA stuff, or they use that S word, sober, and stuff like that, and they don't use our language. You know, my attitude towards that is let them talk. If it's 6 months or a year goes by and they're still talking like that, you might want to ask who their sponsor is, if you get close to them and talk to them. And then go talk to the sponsor and say, hey, we got a language around here. Maybe you ought to be talking to your sponsee about our language. Because if they want to talk language like that, there's a place for them to go where they can feel comfortable. See, I know in a lot of cases, people like to talk and just be a little different because they still suffer from that other disease we all come in with, which is terminal uniqueness. We're all legends in our own minds sometimes. You know I was. I know, like a speaker I heard today, I had to have not only my story, I had to have a lot of stories. Because I was pretty grandiose when I first got here, that after about 4 years, I did not know what my story was anymore because it got so convoluted. And I became pathologic. I started believing this shit. You know, I was talking about running and gunning and running the whole West Side. I never held a gun in my life. I never been in jail longer than, what, 21 days? Oh, yeah, when I was doing time, you know. Yeah, and what was I in for? Assault causing bodily harm, assault, overnight stays. Why? Because my wife would call the police. That's why I went to jail. You see, I had to get honest with myself, right? Because I was not a good member in my community back in the days when I was using. You know, I married someone who didn't even do coffee. And when she used to stand in the doorway saying, you're not going anywhere, when the opiate level in my blood was at a dangerous low, I used to say, hang on a second, I need to go. And you got to get out of the way, otherwise I need to physically remove you. Except I didn't say that in such a language that I just said now. It was more like, and I won't say it, but all I knew is that my oldest son used to, didn't even know her name was Mom, because her name was F and C. That's all he knew, because that's all I would ever call her. And that's how this whole transition and this process has changed my life, because I'm not that person anymore. And when it comes to feeling like someone's done me wrong, most of the time it's because I volunteer. You know, I step up to the plate on that stuff. Anyways, I think I've said just about enough because it's halftime. Anyways, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm an addict named Mike. At this time, I'd like to introduce Mike, who's from the Washington, D.C. area.
My name is Michael, and I'm an addict. And, you know, it's amazing how God works. I came up just to kind of fellowship for a few hours and go right back home. The reason I say that, because this is my wife and I's 15th year anniversary. And thank you. And just as long as I've been clean, you know, it's amazing how I look at my life over these past 15 years. The transformation that has taken place. I remember having my first girl February the 23rd, 1986. I got married April 1986, went in treatment June 1986, and went to my first NA convention right here in 1987. The speaker that spoke prior to me said a lot in regards to the different communities that we belong to. And when they first drafted me an hour prior to this meeting, well, not even an hour, maybe 20 minutes prior to this meeting, And they said the topic was going to be on community. I kind of went upstairs because usually if I'm asked to speak at a meeting, I have an opportunity to kind of do some research. But like I truly believe, there's no accidents, that God governs all events. And for me, the community of this fellowship is a very strong community. And if it wasn't for this strong community, I wouldn't be here today. I probably would still be in that oil joint, probably still had that pistol in my hand. And I do have a story to tell. Because see, when I got here, I had exhausted all of my options. I was spiritually, financially, mentally, physically bankrupt. And if it wasn't for this community that put me back together, I wouldn't be standing here today. Today I can truly say I'm a responsible father, a responsible parent, a responsible husband within that community. And because this is my anniversary weekend, I really wasn't coming up here. I was going to stay home with my wife, and I asked her, well, what are we going to do, hoping that she would say, well, you know, our anniversary is Sunday, so we won't have to do anything Saturday. So that was my exit to get up here. And so I came, you know, because I really wanted to be here. This is one of my favorite conventions. This is one of my favorite communities because it's so diversified. All walks of life, all colors of skin, and we all come for one primary purpose, just to stay clean. And for that, I'm truly blessed that I'm able to come here and witness this miracle. And the community that put this fellowship, this program, this convention together, they stand to be commended, because it takes a lot to put on a convention. And I hear a lot of times when they read, they don't govern, and you hear a lot of people clap their hands. But if it wasn't for the leaders in this fellowship, when it comes down to putting on a convention, we wouldn't have them. Someone needs to stand up. Someone needs to lead. Even though we say we don't have any leaders, but there are people that actually stand up and lead other people. And that's good for me. I need that in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I remember being in a community in Petersburg, Virginia, and I remember being in R&D, and they told me they were going to put me out in the community. And when I got to that community, I ran into a lot of negative people that I grew up with, that I robbed with, that I shot dope with. And I ended up doing the same thing in that community. But when I got to this community, them same people that I did all them things were doing something different. And that's the miracle of this program. I was able to identify in more than identify out because of the attraction, because of the experience that I experienced with the people in negativity, and then being able to come in here and see the miracle, the progression, the progress. And that's what this fellowship has taught me, that it is a process. We don't strive for perfection here. And it's a one-day program. And for me, that's how I've been working it for the last 15 years, just one day at a time. And it has brought me to a point that I could never imagine that I would be at. I can't say enough about this community. You know, it's one that, like you say, we have so many different differences. It has changed a great deal since I've been here, and you shared a lot in regards to that situation. A lot of times in a lot of the rooms, a lot of the meetings, they have taken the Lord's Prayer out, and I have to accept that. You know, after you be around here for a few 24 hours like I have, it's kind of hard for me to kind of not let go of what worked for me, and to come in and try to not isolate like you talked about, Randy, that when after you be around here for a while, you find yourself isolating because of all the different changes that has taken place within the community. Now, there's one thing that hasn't changed, and that's the program. Thank God. So that's why I believe I'm still here, because I know that the program hasn't changed. I can accept the fact that the community has changed, and a lot of times we need that. We need that community to continue to change, because that's what makes the program strong. And for me, you know, it's just been a blessing to see people come in, go out, come in, and go out. And I've never once judged, because no one judged me. And I believe this is the only community that does that. Accepts people exactly where they are, who they are, and love them for who they are. And I don't think there's another community that I know of. I've been to church. My mother's a Baptist minister. I've been in that type of community. And I see how they talk outside of their neck. But this is the only community I know that genuinely accepts a dope fiend like me, who really self-esteem was so low, brought me back to a point that now my self-esteem is so high that I'm able to go out into the communities. And I did the treatment thing too. And it's just amazing how we do. We go in them therapeutic communities and treatment, and then we want to be a counselor. And I did that for 4 years. And I still go into Seven Locks and other places and provide some services for. And all them different communities I see. You know, it's amazing the different communities that we have to deal with, even with my job. You know, I operate a family-run business, and that's a community within itself. I have relatives that work within our company, and a lot of times, because they feel that they're relatives, that they can just do anything they want to do. And a lot of times that offends me, because a lot of times I think they take my kindness for weakness. Because of, quote-unquote, relative, you can't fire me. And a lot of times I see that right here in the fellowship. They take, I don't want to say the old timer, but the person that's been around here for 24 hours, and they put them on this pedestal and think that they don't have feelings. And we have feelings. They say the longer you stay around here, the closer you are. And now I understand what that means. You know, I'm just that one day away. Please don't put me on a pedestal. Because I can go left just like you can. And if it's not for the community continuing to support the people that paved the pathway, they'll ride off into the sunset. My first sponsor rode off into the sunset after I had 8 years clean. After building a relationship for 8 years with him, he rode off into the sunset and haven't been back since. Now, to say if he's clean or not, I don't know. It's not for me to even think about that at that time. All I know is I'm still here. I know I can't ride off into the sunset. And I get well 2 and 3 times a day. And it's amazing, because of this disease that's between these 2 ears of mine, has nothing to do with how I feel. It's how I'm thinking, because my attitude is nothing but my behavior and emotion. So if I don't wake up with a positive attitude, 9 times out of 10, my behavior will act out and display exactly what I'm thinking, and has nothing to do with what I'm feeling, because my feelings are going to come whether I like them or not. And that's the blessing of this program. It has afforded me the process to think things out today within a community. I don't know. I can't say enough about this this fellowship, this community. I know it's the only community that I've been in for the last 15 years that has held together throughout all the controversy, all the disagreements, all the degradation, humiliation. It has held together. And that's the beauty of this fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Because when I got here, there wasn't a lot of meetings in our area. A lot of times we had to go to that other community, and they didn't believe in hugging. They believe in shaking hands. And they didn't believe in talking about shooting dope. They believed in talking about drinking alcohol. And they would cut you off within that community. It just completely stop. We don't talk about drugs in here. We talk about drinking alcohol. And that just wasn't for me. And it made me continue to focus back into the community of Narcotics Anonymous. And then when the areas began to grow bigger and bigger, I completely just strayed away from the other community because I knew where my roots were. Even though I know that alcohol is the mother of all drugs. And that was the first drug that I put in my body. And today I stay within this community. I don't venture out into the other community. I have no need for that other community. I have no need for the other community that they developed called CA. I believe a drug is a drug. And now, like you say, I've been around here for so long, all these different communities are popping up. You know, we got AA, we got NA, we got CA, we got DA, we got BA, we got SA, we got PA, and that's the one I haven't figured out yet. No one yet has told me what that meeting is. And what I mean by that, when I heard the word PA, it talks about Paranoia Anonymous. Did y'all get it? Went right past you, didn't it? I thought so, because it did for me. People are real paranoid, and they won't tell you where a meeting is. And when I heard that definition of that, it kind of locked in because it let me know the adversity and how wide these communities can become and the different choices that we have in developing and growing within the different communities. Just like the community and where I grew up at, we didn't believe in hugging and sharing and telling the truth, you know. But this community, like I said, is the only community that I know of that has all of that and has put me in a point in my recovery that I'm able to grow and blossom. How did I end up with 15 more minutes here? I'm thinking I'm just about finished here. I don't know exactly too much I can say in regards to the community. You said it all, truly. And I think what we can do at this time, we can open it up for discussion for the last 15 minutes. My name is Michael, and I'm an addict. Thank you for letting me share.
We do still have 15 more minutes, so if anybody wants to get up to the mic and share.
I'm an addict. My name is Valerie. I'd like to thank God for being here. You know, it's heard both of you talking about how your old-timers need help, too. And that the old-timers need help, too. And after having 8 years, I have 46 days clean today. And I'm finding it, I'm resentful, and I'm angry, not at the fellowship as a whole, but some people within the fellowship. I was at a point that I recognized that something was not right with me. And I could only muster up enough to get to a meeting at 12 o'clock one night. And had been sharing that I had been really feeling real fucked up for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And did not have a clue as to what was going on. But all I could tell you is that I was feeling real fucked up and I had never been here before. And that I reached out and I asked for some help. And the night before I made the decision, I was in a lot of pain, and I had never experienced that pain before. And I didn't know what to do. My sponsor was in the hospital. She had had surgery, and I was caught up. My disease had me. And all I could do is I remembered I could muster up just enough to crawl and take my ass to a meeting. And I just knew that, and I said to myself, just get to a meeting. Y'all told me that no matter what, just get to a meeting and you'll be all right. This is my experience. And I was able to get to a meeting, and I sat there and I shared. I had been having drug dreams. I not only thought about using, it was becoming more intense. The feelings, I had a pocket full of money, I shared all that. And I was left alone. And because y'all did not respond to me the way I was told by so many people, when y'all shared about what y'all all have to do is come in here and share, and this response was not what y'all said it was, I said, fuck it. And fuck y'all. And I proceeded to get fucked up. And I have not been able to forgive myself. I'm still at times angry. And especially when, you know, like I went to Philly's convention last weekend, and it was very humbling. It was very humiliating to stand up when it came down for the clean time countdown, because there were people around who I looked around the room and I saw people who knew me. And I had to sit there and I'm sweating and my stomach turning. And I said, God, help me. Because I got to do this for me. And it's I'm experiencing a lot of humility. And I am very, very humble as a result. I'm doing what I don't want to do. My gut be tossing. My disease be talking. And in spite of my resentment, in spite of my anger, I keep coming back. Because in spite of all that took place, I know this program works. And I'm thankful. At times, and sometimes, I'm thankful for the experience, because what it has done for me, it has opened up a new door. And I now understand a lot about what y'all say when you say you have to come to understand this program for yourself, and that the only thing between you and a drink and a drug is the God of your understanding. And instead of reaching for God, I reach to y'all. And I struggle and like I'm trying. When I listen, the tape continues to play, and it's that battle of trying to listen and being open-minded, and my disease talking to me and say, don't listen to them, don't trust them, don't believe, you know what I'm saying? They let you down before, and it's that constant struggle. So what I'm trying to say is, on a daily basis, I struggle to stay here. You know, because my disease has been woke up, and it's not and an arresting point because I'm still toxic and all that, the reality of it. And I struggled. I found myself, I hadn't been to a meeting for a whole week. I find myself, and I need to tell y'all, I need to tell on myself. I've been justifying, I've been, you know, allowing my disease to keep me caught up in that anger. Allow my disease to keep me caught up in resentment. And all I know is that I just tell. I just share, and I'm going to keep on sharing. And I'm going to keep on telling on my disease. And I have to tell myself that that might have been a few, and it's not everybody, but my disease won't tell me it's all of y'all. You know, and so I'm constantly battling with my disease, which is here. You know, and I don't know, I've been wanting to share, and I've been needing to share. I didn't make it to the marathon, and I just needed to share about that. I thought I'd gotten better, but some days are good, and some days, you know, it's just where it is. And I believe in sharing where I am right now, you know, and what I've done is exposed my disease. I know that works. You know, I don't have to feel shame. I know I have to expose it. I got to shed the light on it because if I don't, then I could use again. And if I don't use again, then I could take my own life because those were my choices, and I chose the lesser of the few. You know, all I wanted was some help. I really didn't want to die. But that was the choices my disease had me caught up in the grip of. And I just need to get that out. I need to free myself. I've gotten more selfish with myself. It's all about me. It is all about me. And that's a good place for me to be. Because if I concentrate on what other people think, feel, I'll lose myself again. And I am the most important person to me. And with that, I'm going to keep coming back.
Thanks for sharing.
Hi, everyone. My name's Lois, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Lois.
I really, really feel for the sister who was just sharing. And thank you both for sharing. And I want to just share real briefly, not about the community, but just about me and recovery, right? And that I'm reminded every day that I had the disease of addiction. You know, and I recognize, and I don't always recognize this myself, and that's why I'm really grateful for network and sponsorship, right? But I recognize how it manifests itself in my life, and I know this much about me from being really honest with myself, and I had to learn how to get honest with myself, that once I make a decision to do something, nobody can convince me otherwise. Once I make a decision to use, my mind is made up, you know, and I have had experiences. I have actually experienced that thing, that firsthand, where the only thing that stood between me and using was the God of my understanding, you know, where it actually seemed like an option for me. You know what I'm saying? Even remembering the pain. I mean, I've been around for a minute, right? And I have had moments in the last year or two where I just want to check out. I don't want to use. I just didn't want to wake up. But one thing that I had to learn how to do, and I fall short with this, but I have to be real careful. I've been able to recognize when I'm in a relapse mode. You know what I'm saying? And when I get to a fuck it place too long in the fuck it zone, I always fuck me. and I'm really scared to death to use, but that does not mean I don't have thoughts of using. I still have using dreams. You know what I'm saying? And one of the hardest things for me to do when I got clean was to forgive myself. It was really hard for me to do. And when I relapsed, for me to forgive myself, I was so angry at me. You know, I remember somebody asking me, so, Lois, aren't you getting ready to celebrate? And I just knew that they knew that I had relapsed, even though I hadn't told anyone. And, but it was, I think it was the pain, I think it was the humility that I wasn't willing to exercise that brought me to understand that I had to just really stop beating up on myself. And a lot of times I would get help, but it didn't come in the shape and the form that I wanted it. Because it's like, I can't get nobody clean, and I can't stop nobody from using once their mind is made up. Nobody, no human power could restore me. And no human power can restore me to sanity. But through the relationship that I have with God and my allowing myself to be open, which I'm not always open. I am not always open. I am not always willing. And I'm not always honest. Okay? But when I'm able to exercise that, it gives me just another day. Sometimes it gives me just another minute, which gives me the hope of having another hour, which next thing I know is another day. You know, and I just wanted to just share to you, my sister, that, you know, just the love, you just got to love yourself. And I'm still learning how to do that. But I know that one of the things that I had to do first was forgive myself, because we do all make mistakes, right? And one thing I know, people will fail us, but my higher power never fails me. And when people ask me how I'm doing, I can honestly say today, I'm doing better because I'm learning how to get out of my way, because I keep blocking my blessings. See, I've been to jail 5.5 years clean. I have practiced some insanity. I can make myself toxic just from resentments. You know what I'm saying? And I have to pray for people I don't want to pray for. So just give yourself a break. You know, give yourself a break. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't always love Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful to be clean. I wasn't always grateful to be clean. You know, but I am grateful today to be clean. And I'm a productive member of society today. And I live from pay period to pay period. And sometimes I get discouraged when I project, you know, even if it's a month in advance. Because if I miss one pay period, I'm out. I don't have shit. My rent's not paid, my car note, it's nothing. But I don't look that far ahead, because what I'm finding, even I came up here with just a little bit of money, God, my higher power gives me everything I need. Gives me everything I need. You know, and then some. And one thing that came to mind too about the community of Narcotics Anonymous, like the society, when I'm out in the community, when I'm outside of the rooms, and I run into somebody in the fellowship, I'm really bad with names, what have you. I love how we embrace each other like we do. You know what I'm saying? I can be in a busy business district anywhere, and we can know each other and know to be anonymous. Like I ran into someone recently at work, and I could tell he was a little hesitant because he knew we recognized each other from meetings. And he, you know, we're there with our colleagues and what have you. But it was cool. We hugged each other, and they're looking at us like, wow. You know, I mean, it's even a power of example when the way that we embrace each other and the respect that we have each other and the empathy that we have for each other, you know. And I know that we come in here. I know that I came in here, you know, with some ills of society, you know what I'm saying, and with some issues and some baggage. But I'm getting better one day at a time, and I'm not striving for perfection today. But I did strive for perfection, and it drove me crazy. And I would think because I had using dreams that something was wrong with me, or that I wasn't doing something I needed to be doing. But sometimes my higher power allows me into a visual and a physical free high through a dream, which is actually a damn nightmare, because I wake up and I'm on it. And I'm hyperventilating and everything. And I wake up and I find that it's a dream. And I'm grateful one more day. You know, but all I have is this moment. Tomorrow's not promised. Yesterday is gone. So all I have is this moment. I try to make the most of each moment. And that's the best that I can do. And the best that I can do is not the best that other people who have my best interests at heart, it's not the best that they can do, but it's the best that I can do. And I got to be okay with that. And I thank you for letting me share.
All right, we are out of time. I'd like to thank those who shared for a good meeting.